Joining us now to analyze today's headlines is Rahul Mahajan. He's a sociologist and author of Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond. Hi, Rahul.
Hi, Sonali.
Greek banks have closed down and limited cash withdrawals in the latest chapter in Greece's bailout discussions a day ahead of the deadline for a deal. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras of the anti-austerity Syriza party lambasted the bank's closures as impeding the democratic expression of the Greek people. German Chancellor Angela Merkel chided Tsipras, saying that he needed to compromise and that no one can get 100%. She added that the troika of creditors made a, quote, generous offer that was our contribution to a compromise. The German parliament has scheduled a debate on Greece this Wednesday, and Greeks will be voting in a referendum on whether to remain in the eurozone next Sunday. Meanwhile, Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz speculated that a Greek exit from the eurozone could prompt a serious geopolitical crisis for Europe, and proposed that the only way forward would be to write off Greece's debt or not require payment for more than a decade. Well, Rahul, it looks extremely likely that there will be no agreement by tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it looks that way. I mean, you don't put a national referendum with a completely vaguely defined question at the last minute as anything except a sort of extraordinary emergency measure. So, you know, I think the last straw for Tsipras was the fact that the Greek proposal, which involved, among other things, trying to shift the tax burden to make it more progressive, put more on businesses and less on consumers, was roundly rejected by the European creditors in favor of making the situation even more regressive than it is in a country that is already under the crisis of having, you know, had a 25% GDP reduction in the last 5 years. So the only way to interpret this referendum is as a preliminary justification for an exit from the eurozone. If it was simply a matter of rejecting this particular deal, it's hard to understand why the government would have had to take it to the Greek people.
And here in the United States, a battle over the Confederate flag continued over the weekend, most notably when a young African-American activist named Bree Newsom scaled the flagpole of the South Carolina State House in Columbia and took down the offensive symbol. Newsom inspired massive support online and more than $100,000 in donations toward her legal fees when she and her fellow activist were arrested. She's a filmmaker and musician and the daughter of Clarence G. Newsom, who was a dean at Howard University. Meanwhile, NASCAR chairman Brian France just announced that all Confederate flag symbols will now be banned from the race car sporting event that's quite popular in the southern states. And last night, a Boston Civil War memorial paying tribute to the first all-black regiments fighting for the Union was desecrated when someone hung a Confederate flag over it. Well, Rahul, has the battle over the flag turned into a sort of proxy war over the U.S.'s struggle with racism?
Well, I'm not sure. I think the battle over the flag has been a proxy war for racism, or a proxy for racism, at least since about 2000 in a very active way. That's the first time it became a major issue in a presidential campaign. I think what's happened right now is that while no serious concessions are going to be made on the broad issue of racism and the kinds of way it's institutionalized in, for example, the criminal justice system, at least not right away, the flag is a reasonable sacrificial lamb, and it's being thrown to the winds by people who I think even 2 years ago could not have imagined admitting that the flag is an expression of white supremacy and not simply a celebration of Southern history.
And finally, Texas State Attorney General Ken Paxton has decided to defy Friday's historic Supreme Court ruling legalizing marriage in all 50 states. Mr. Paxton called it a, quote, lawless ruling, and said that while Texas clerks could be fined for refusing to issue marriage licenses, his office would defend them in court pro bono. Some gay couples in Texas were able to get married over the weekend, but others in Mississippi and Louisiana were barred from doing so. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal, who just announced his candidacy for the Republican presidential nomination, said that while the ruling was clear, there was no mandate to begin issuing licenses immediately. Like others among the Christian right, he insisted that the ruling was an affront to religious freedom. Pride parades around the world on Sunday celebrated the U.S. decision. Well, Rahul, as far as you know, this is a done deal, right? In the U.S., doesn't the Christian right need to just declare this war over?
Well, the South has a long history of declaring the right of nullification of laws in one way or another. And Texas in particular has a history of, for example, the legislature refusing, just ignoring requirements by the court, for example, to come up with a plan for equitable funding of school districts. It did this for decades. In this case, however, although they're tapping into that kind of rich tradition of refusal, this is really dog in the manger stuff for two reasons. One is that you can't get everyone to go along with an illegal violation of the Supreme Court's order. So as long as people start getting married in Texas, it's going to be very hard to sustain some sort of revolt by a handful of people. And secondly, with regard to, say, Obamacare, which we thought was a done deal, they took the legislative decision to the courts. This time it's a court decision and they have nowhere to take it.
Rahul, thank you as always for joining us and helping us untangle some of these headlines. Thanks so much. My guest, Rahul Mahajan, is sociologist and author of Full Spectrum Dominance, U.S. Power in Iraq and Beyond. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.